Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm Will Harris, and today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures.
Episode 30 of The Morning After. 30 weeks here, reporting live Heritage Radio, Roberta's, Jack Insley. Jack, what are you doing in there? You're running, you forgot to plug a computer in or something.
What's that?
Oh, no, I saw you plug your computer in really fast.
Oh, yeah, I got all kinds of things going on here.
Give a shout out to executive producer Jack Insley. Had an night last night. I won't get too far into it, but...
It was a great night.
You did? You were at the Ace Hotel?
Yeah.
Good times?
Very good times.
Did you see Friedman, Ken?
I did not. I also learned that Greg Bresnitz from Snacky Tunes works there. I didn't see him either, though.
Yeah, he pretends to be a big personality, but he's just seriously a busboy at Ace Hotel.
Whoa.
I'm just kidding around.
Whoa.
We all have to have our day jobs.
That's right.
It's fine. Here we are here on a beautiful day. This is my favorite time of year here at Roberta's, right before the Tiki nightclub starts, whatever you want to call it, which is a really fun thing, and everyone comes out for brunch. We have some interesting guests, a kind of diverse crew here. We have some events we have set up in studio. Mitchell Davis, Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. Interview with him. James Beard Awards tomorrow. I don't know what parties you guys are going to, but I'm all set. I have to pick up my tux tomorrow. Harry Rosenblum, Brooklyn Kitchen. Harry, what's up?
Nice to be here, as always.
Did you bring a... it's not your first time here?
I wasn't going to tell anybody.
Oh, I'm kidding around. I knew that. Allison Whittinghill.
Yes.
Guys, everybody speak into the mics. That's why they're there. Chef John Lamanto of Tawar Porch. I always get the Italian names wrong. Being a Colucci, it's sort of my self-deprecating side.
No, you nailed it.
Okay, cool. Thanks, guys, for everybody for coming in. Is everybody ready? Ready to go to talk shop here at The Morning After?
Yay.
Awesome. I just have to give... my sister called me like 2 hours ago. She's like... I'm in Red Bank, New Jersey, and I just want you to know that their food and wine festival is going on right now. So anyone in Red Bank, New Jersey, check out the food and wine festival. On a more serious note, do you guys, you know, the Sunday Times runs this sometimes, and Wall Street Journal, most magazines have this thing where they hang out a day with somebody, whether it's, a singer, actor, in our particular case, it's food personalities, and they say, hey, what's your typical Saturday like? And mostly it's embellishment. I mean, Harry, what is a Sunday like? You wake up and you get coffee, right? You don't go to the Met and then from the Met walk around Central Park and then have dinner at Danielle and then go see the opera and then
that would be awesome if that was my regular, like, no. If I was doing that, if I did that today, I wouldn't be here.
But do you know what
so
I'm talking
So this morning yeah. I got up, I had coffee because okay. I have coffee every morning.
Where do you have your coffee?
In my kitchen.
And is there a particular brand that you like?
Recently, I've been drinking Dallas Brothers because we've started selling it at the Brooklyn Kitchen.
Okay.
What one should understand is that if you ever go into the specialty grocery business, you will essentially only eat things that come from the store that you own.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's much easier. I don't have time to go to the supermarket or to go to the farmer's market, so I bring stuff home that we sell.
Okay. Well, yeah, I have the same thing, but it's the bodega side of it. It's Bustelo and Pilon.
Sure.
And I make it with a sock in my house. But there's a couple of
interesting... So our day starts the same, essentially.
Same deal. Same beginning. I don't know if the outcome's the same. But do you guys... Have you seen this whole... You know, I hate to give this guy any more airtime than he deserves, but Joe Bastianich's book that came out, he took a shot at Sergio Marchionne, which is sort of the godfather of New York City fine dining restaurants, U.S. fine dining restaurants. Partner Mario Battaglia and co-owner of Babbo Del Posto in Italy continues to lose friends and palates with his new memoir, Restaurant Man. Among those targeted in his searing tome, Le Cirque legend Sergio Marchionne, whom Bastianich brands as facing oblivion, with customers who are all dead or dying. He says of Marchione, I really don't dislike the guy, although he always treated me like a piece of burm. Customers' loyalty to Marchione's high-end haunts include Osteria, DeCirco. Anyway, I don't know. Has anyone read this book, first of all?
No.
No, right?
I saw Mario yesterday. He was at Smorgasburg, apparently, for the second week in a row.
Did you ask him about this book at all, or no?
No, but I did talk to him. I met him in... I've met him a couple of times, but I last saw him in Chicago in March, and I gave him my card, and I guess he then gives his card to every, you know, to an assistant or an intern and says, send this person a letter. So
is
I
her name Anastasia, the assistant?
I don't think Anastasia writes those letters. Okay. I know Anastasia, and I don't think she would have sent me a letter from Mario that said, Harry, it was really great meeting you in Hong Kong. Mario. So, I mean, Mario and I apparently had an awesome time in Hong Kong. I don't remember ever being in Hong Kong, and certainly not.
No, we did. We removed. Yeah, you were there. We got you a nice suit and everything.
It must have been great. But he did tell me yesterday about Smorgasburg. He said this is the greatest place of all time.
There you go. That well, that's yeah. I get those.
And I was going to tell him he had the most orange Crocs of all time. But
is anyone here doing the Great Googa Mooga, like we are here at the Morning After?
The Meat Hook will be there.
You got great. There's some other restaurants: Bauhaus, Big Gay Ice Cream, Blue Ribbon.
Terroir is going to be there.
Terroir will be there.
All right, you guys will be there.
Yeah,
okay.
Available.
All right, so you guys will be there. See you there. No eye contact, please. Calicchio and Sons, Craft, Crift Dogs, DBGB, Dixon's Farm Stand, Dinosaur Barbecue,
Heritage
Dirty
Radio,
Vertigo, Heritage Radio, The Morning After, Jack Inslee.
Yeah,
Jesse Kiefer, Jason Colucci, yours truly. We'll all be there. Prospect Park. Let's hope it doesn't rain on Sunday. Really excited about that. But first, we have the James Beard Awards coming up tomorrow night. Tonight is the Chef's Night Out. And we got a chance to talk to Mitchell Davis, the Executive Vice President of the James Beard, earlier today. Let's hear that interview. I'm sitting with Mitchell Davis, Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. Of course, we all know the James Beard Awards is tomorrow, early evening. Mitchell, can you talk to me about the preparation that leads up to the event tomorrow?
Sure. Well, first I should say we're actually in the middle of the awards because we started Friday night with the Book, Broadcast, and Journalism Awards.
Okay, so that's like when the Oscars does all those editing awards that we don't see on air.
Yeah, exactly. Although these are almost more visible in some ways because it's the writers, the book authors, the TV personalities. So it's actually, it's funny, the big night obviously is the gala at Lincoln Center for all the chefs and restaurant folks on Monday, but we actually give out more awards now on Friday night. It's a funny change.
I know I've used it a lot, but are you tired of the Oscar analogy to the James Beard? Because it shows the grandioseness of it.
I think the Oscar people are probably after us with trademark issues, but we didn't say it. Time magazine said it, so we always quote Time so that they get in trouble.
And it's interesting because James Beard came to New York as an actor.
Yes.
Which is even more apropos of the entire New York City restaurant industry, because we all sort of come in as some sort of creative background. Right. Do you have that background as well in some sort of...
I actually came as food.
Okay.
I started in food and ended in food and had no aspirations to be on stage, but many people in this industry started that way and continue to be that way. You know, where would restaurants be without actors? I always think of a funny... This is totally off topic.
No, not perfect.
A funny story, Mimi Sheridan, who was one of the great New York Times restaurant critics, once said she was in a restaurant and the waiter said that she asked the waiter, who was horrible, if he was an actor, and he said yes, and she said, you should try acting like a waiter, and ba-dum-bum, you know, it's one of the facts of life. They go hand in hand, I think.
Did you know James Beard at all?
I did not.
It was Arthur Schwartz, who was a guest last week. I guess James Beard got him his first apartment. He knew him as Jim Beard.
Everyone who knew him called him Jim, and we sometimes... You know, we call it, refer to Jim's Kitchen at the Beard House. No, it's one of the few regrets in the food world I have. I don't have many. I'm a self-indulgent person.
Yeah.
But never having known him, I've read personal papers. I know people who knew him. You know, I feel like I had a sense, but I really regret not being able to ever just have a meal with him because he seemed like such an amazing lover of food and life.
American culture.
And also, I mean, we celebrate him as the dean of American cuisine, but he loved French food, and he loved Chinese food was one of his great passions. It just seems like a really unique man.
The
back to the awards.
No, oh yeah, let's get back to the awards. So, spoken like a true host on the network. You have a show here on the network?
Yeah, Wednesday mornings at 11, we have a show called Taste Matters, where we're just talking about taste, really. For me, I come at food. I mean, I love to cook, and I love restaurants, and I'm involved in lots of different aspects of writing about food. But for me, I think we undervalue taste in our culture, and we sort of put it in a funny place. And I think that if we paid more attention at every level, at the finest restaurant and just at the food truck, to how our food tastes and how we could make decisions about how we make our food based on how it tastes, I think we'd be better off. So
it would push everything forward. So you're getting back to the Beard Awards, the one big award this year, obviously every year, it's sort of the Chef of the Year. April Bloomfield is nominated.
Is nominated.
I know you can't get into who would win or whatever. What are the two big awards other than everything that's happened in the past few days?
So the way the Chef and Restaurant Awards work is there are regional awards, and the country is divided into 10 regions,
which is the most fun in terms of the U.S. because you can see what's out there if you're traveling.
Exactly, and there you know it starts with our semifinalists we announce in February, and you just see there's 30 restaurants and chefs in each category, and it's like, wow, there's amazing food happening everywhere. And so there are those regional awards, and then there are ones that are sort of more national. So Outstanding Chef, as you said, or Chef of the Year, colloquially, it's technically Outstanding Chef, is obviously a big one. But for me, some of the most exciting ones are Best New Restaurant, for instance, because that's for something you don't expect.
It's just pushing a trend.
Seeing, and Rising Star Chef, you have to be under 30, and these days it seems like every chef is under 30, but you see names in places you wouldn't know otherwise.
It's under 30, and you have to have sleeve tattoos. I think that's the prerequisite.
Indeed, and a little scruff and maybe some funky glasses.
I'm speaking with Mitchell Davis, Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. We're talking about the James Beard Awards. One more thing, the hottest party, after party, because we'll be out tomorrow. Is it the Danielle Blue party at Bar Blue?
That's convenient.
I call it the Vanity Fair party.
There's that. There will certainly be people in a more subdued way, probably at Per Se. I mean, those are proximate to Lincoln Center, but you know, you never know. Sometimes it depends. There was a moment one year in the past when the music was so loud and people were dancing on so much of the furniture at 11 Madison EMP, Park that as I walked in, Danny Meyer was walking out and he said, "I can't see this happen." I mean, he still owned it then, and so
legally he's not allowed to see. He can't see
legally, and from his heart, while he still owned those banquettes that people were dancing on. So you don't. I mean, one of the fun things is there are no official after parties; they just happen.
They just happen wherever. Wins. I remember
someone wins.
I worked for Drew Nepporn when he won Restaurant Tour of the Year, and then there was a pop-up party at Nobu 57.
Absolutely. Everyone's sitting watching. You can watch them live stream, by the way, at jamesbeard.org. They'll be live from 6 o'clock, and you'll see the whole ceremony. And there's some neat things happening this year. Just for one aspect, there's a new play that a great playwright has written about James Beard's life, a one-man show, and we're going to debut a scene from that in the ceremony. So there'll be some interesting stuff if you want to watch. And then if you just want to party, you'll hear the noise when you walk out your building. If you're in New York City, you'll know that there's something happening, I'm sure.
Well, Mitchell, thank you for your time. I will see you tomorrow night.
Indeed. Looking
Cheers.
Forward to it.
Bye-bye. Well, that was the interview. Let's take a break. Jack, when is his show on? Mitchell's.
It's Wednesdays at 11. It's a hell of a show, too.
Yeah, but that competes with General Hospital. I can't.
Shit.
We'll come back the morning after.
Go Knicks.
White Oak Pastures is a 146-year-old multi-generational family farm that works in cooperation with nature to produce artisan meat that is safe, healthy, nutritious, and good to eat. Without fail, we ensure that our production practices are economically practical ecologically sustainable, and that the animals are always humanely treated. We never falter in our determination to conduct our business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
Wow. I don't know if those two voices ever were meant to go together, but it worked. Jack, are you doing that that effect locally, or is that something you pre-recorded?
That's me live.
Oh, wow. And you can hear that kind of effect at Knife Show?
Yeah, sure. KnifeShowMusic.com.
Knife Show.
Thanks for the plug.
Dude, we're all family here until the great Google Mooga happens, and then, you know, we have our little tent that we're going to build. Are we good with that so far?
Yeah. I have one last thing to say about the James Beard Awards.
Go for it.
They snubbed Heritage Radio.
Of course they did.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Of course they did. Well, I think we should dump that show then. I'm going to have to talk to Patrick Martins.
Yeah, really.
My James Beard. And I call him Pat, just like Arthur Schwartz called him James Jim. I want to move on. Harry Rosenblum. The Brooklyn Kitchen is the studio. Harry, I have a little clip here from the website that I'm going to read that you guys have on your about section.
Sure. It might be outdated, so hopefully
It is, but a little bit, because I don't think you're amateur chefs anymore. We are amateur chefs.
Nobody pays me to cook, and I think that's the delineating line, right, between being amateur and professional?
Well,
in sports it is, right? You're an amateur in the Olympics. Nobody pays you. You're professional if they get paid.
There's a Nike. Oh, and enjoy cooking, but there was somewhere in Williamsburg, Greenport, to get cooking tools and supplies. This became abundantly clear in the summer of 2005. We went in search of pectin for making grape jelly.
Mm-hmm.
There are 25 pounds of ripe grapes on the vine in the backyard, and I needed canning quick. Finally, after a somewhat failed attempt at making it from scratch, we headed to Connecticut to buy much-needed pectin. Did you go to Martha Stewart's house to get that?
No, I could have, though, actually. She lives near Connecticut. She actually lives in Katona, New York, which is actually where I grew up.
Oh, really?
And a very good friend of mine is her head of security. Somewhere I have a picture of, like, hanging out in the volunteer firehouse in Katona.
Is he formerly of SEAL Team 6?
He actually formerly worked for the state of New York as a prison guard. And when she was under house arrest, he was assigned to her house by the state. And then after, right around the time that she was no longer
exclusive.
Under...
This is stuff you're not going to see on the...
Under house arrest, he retired. He was ready to retire from working for the prison system. And so he's now her head of security.
Well, moving on, we were talking about classes that you guys have coming up.
Yeah.
And there's some stuff that you're really excited about.
At the Brooklyn Kitchen, we do lots and lots of classes every month. Some of the most exciting stuff that's coming up, off the top of my head, in June, we have two sake events. One on June 2nd that's going to be 16 sake and shochu brewers coming in and basically showing off their best stuff. And then in August, we have a knife-making event coming up. We're bringing over some craftsmen from Japan, who I worked with in 2010 when I was in Japan. They're going to demonstrate how Japanese knives are made by hand and do it for real. That will be August 18th outdoors at Smorgasburg, and they actually will be forging steel.
Are you a fan of the Kill Bill series?
Yeah.
My favorite person that makes Japanese steel is Hattori Hanzo, and I pulled up a clip here from the movie. Most of it's in Japanese, but...
Fuck. He's a he. May I ask?
Hattori Hanzo.
Was that what it was like when you were trying to get these guys to come over here?
Japanese, yeah.
You had to go to a small sushi place and ask...
It is incredible that when you go to Japan, that it is the way... I mean, it is much more... provincial and artisanal, I think, than people kind of even imagine. The sharpener that we worked with, you know, his shop is about the size of the room we're sitting in right now. And that's it. And the guy's 80 years old, and he learned to sharpen when he was a kid. And there's two little kids who, I say little kids, they're probably in their 20s, who are his apprentices, who aren't allowed to touch anything. They just sweep the floor. And one guy's been there for like 7 years. And eventually he'll be allowed to like touch the steel and sharpen the knives, and then he'll take over, you know.
We had David Gelb, the director of the Euro Dreams of Sushi, a couple of weeks ago, and the same kind of apprenticeship applies there. I think you're not allowed to make the egg sushi for 10 years. You have to witness it and make rice and stuff. So the same kind of aesthetics apply. But let's talk about, you're talking about sake. Am I like that guy when I go to a sushi place and I order the hot sake? Is that sort of not the thing to do?
No, I mean, and far be it from, I'm not, like I said, I'm an amateur, I'm not a professional. But, in my experience, I think that there are really two different ways that I've seen sake be consumed. The Japanese love to drink all the time with food. And so what will happen is you'll sit down at dinner and you'll get sake and beer. usually very light, you know, some kind of light lager, Sapporo or Asahi. And you just continue. I mean, like, as soon as your glass is empty, they, you know,
somebody else has to pour it for you.
Yes. Somebody else is supposed to pour for you. So you're also kind of, you know, if you're trying to be culturally aware, you kind of have to be on the lookout for empty glasses.
Isn't it annoying when somebody else isn't culturally aware and you're pouring?
Yeah, and you're like, I'm thirsty. You know?
I hate that. I try to do that sometimes, and I pour somebody else's, and I'm like, and they don't not. They're like, they just think I'm being really nice, and they don't pick it up, and they don't re-pour.
And then you're sitting there and you're thirsty and you have nothing to drink. And
yeah, and it's the, you know, it's two fingers the glass anyway, those sake glasses. But look, after, so 2005, you're here now, monetizing the location without getting into the details of it. Is it, have you, do you see it more with the classes or with sort of the retail side of it? Somebody shut their phone off. I don't know. Is that me? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Well, I mean, you know, so we opened in 2006 in a small storefront on Lorimer Street in Williamsburg, and about 700 square feet. And then in 2009, moved into a 5,000 square foot space. And at that same time, we partnered with Tom Mylan and Brent Young and Ben Turley to open the Meat Hook as part of that expansion. And the expansion had to do with a number of things. We sort of ran out of space for retail where we were, but also our classes had become so popular in our tiny little store, we could only have 8 people per class. We could only have classes 4 days a week. So we expanded and now have 2 classrooms that are running simultaneously. Right before I came here, I was at the store. You know, there were 2 classes of 15 people each happening this afternoon over there. Butcher shop's running. We're selling stuff. The shop is operating. So I think that in terms of, like, you know, rough estimate of numbers, the hard goods, the pots, pans, knives, that stuff is still our number one in terms of revenue.
Big markup. Oh, sorry, I'm kidding around.
It's better than food, I'll tell you that.
All clad, $700. I'm kidding around. I'm kidding around.
And then probably after that is classes, after that is grocery, as far as like where our revenue streams are coming from.
When you say Tom Mylan, Mylan, the beef guys up, and they're the only producers of steers, cattle that are that have their own slaughterhouse, correct? I've been there. Is that the same? Is that
no,
Mylan?
You're thinking of Mylar.
Mylar, sense,
yes.
Okay,
but yes, we get some of our meat at the Meat Hook from Mylar.
Mylar, yeah. I've been. Have you been to that?
I actually haven't visited them specifically.
It's pretty cool. I mean, I think they can swing out about 12 steers, as we call it in the industry, cows for milking around here, and you get that beef. That beef is amazing. It's 100% grass fed. Mm-hmm. There's no corn involved, but it has a very specific flavor profile. Is that stuff that you guys are looking for with the Meat Hook and things?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things with the Meat Hook is chain of custody and sort of having that knowledge and knowing and being able to say to a customer who comes in, you know, if a customer came in and said, you know, who touched this pork chop? We could pretty much tell you every single person. We could tell you the farmer who raised it. We can tell you the slaughterhouse where it was slaughtered, name of the truck driver who delivered it, and the name of the butcher who cut it. And that's it. I mean, it's, you know, 5 people or so.
Is that, I know you guys are aware, but I remember about two or three years ago, it was everywhere. Is that sort of, not necessarily died off, but it's just been absorbed as normal sea now?
I think so. I mean, I also, you know, the other thing about it is that it's not, you know, there are customers who care and customers who don't, and we sell stuff to both of them. I mean, it, you know, and the same thing is true in what we sell at the Brooklyn Kitchen. I mean, I've sold, you know, $500 knife to someone who walked in and said, I want the most expensive knife that you sell. And they didn't even look at it. They didn't try it. They didn't do anything. And then, you know, I've spent 2 hours with someone trying to make sure they get the right knife, and the one they buy is a $75 knife, and that's fine. I mean, you know, that makes no difference to me either way, but it's one of those things that some people want the information, and we're willing, you know, we're there to do that, and then some people are just going to buy the stuff no matter what.
Speaking of knives, we're gonna take another break, and we have a bottle of Prosecco here. Jess, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back. We're gonna do this. There's a video of you sabering a bottle of wine.
Yes, must be sparkling. Okay, champagne, Prosecco, something like that.
All right, we have that here. We have a knife as well.
Brooklyn Brewery beer. The large bottles that are bottled in champagne bottles also works. I've done it with that.
Like that local one or whatever.
Local one, local two. Yeah.
Okay, so we have all this stuff here. We're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back and we're gonna try this out.
Sounds
on
great.
Air, which works perfect for radio.
I don't know if it's ever been done.
Exclusive.
Hey, hey, hey.
it towards the... We're away from it. We can shoot it towards the boar. Right? Yeah.
Not cheap either. Although he's pretty solidly...
Yeah, yeah. I know a guy that's a taxidermist. I know a guy.
You know him?
That's good.
Oh, yeah.
You got a guy?
He's fine. I got a guy. All right, so let's say we're all...
It might be best to do it towards the corner, just because the thing... I mean, it's a flying piece of glass.
Yeah.
It's got, like, propellant behind it.
That's fair enough. We're all set here. I apologize that phone sound before was my phone. I just realized that when I looked at it again, but I put it on silent. All right, so Harry, we're all set. We have the knife.
Great.
We have the bottle.
Yep.
It's carbonated.
Just so everyone knows, the knife, if you come and eat at Roberta's, it's the regular knife that you will get on your table that I'm going to attempt to saber this bottle with.
And
it's not the steak knife. It's not a chef's knife.
You can buy it at Brooklyn Kitchen. I think it's $22 a piece at the Brooklyn Kitchen.
Well, those are for the signed sabering knives, actually, that are custom fabricated for us.
Okay. Let's try this. So we're going to shoot it towards the corner.
Do I need to move?
No, I'll go that way.
Jack is very anxious right now. Oh, into the bag. Or maybe not.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Safety first.
Jack, I'm sorry.
I was about to say I'm a professional because I've done this before, but given my earlier, I know he's paying for me.
You know, and this stuff works great on radio. It really does. Anything visual like this works perfect. Okay, we're here. We're in the corner. He's shooting it towards here at 3, 2, 1.
Oh.
And,
Oh,
boppa!
It worked.
Oh, it worked. Wow. Oh, that is awesome. Harry, you are my new best friend. And I will keep this. This will go in the Morning After archives along with Arthur Schwartz.
Why don't you explain what exactly happened for the people who couldn't see that?
No problem. I mean, everyone couldn't really picture it in their minds by hearing it. So in order to saber a bottle, there is a video on the web of me doing this.
And where can we find that?
You can find it at thebrooklynkitchen.com.
Perfect.
You essentially remove the cage because you want to expose and you remove any labels or anything around the neck of the bottle. And what you're basically trying to do is to hit the glass where the cage is holding the cork on. There's sort of a little ridge there. And you're trying to hit that. And what happens is that essentially there's so much pressure in the neck of the bottle that as you make a tiny little fissure there, it basically cracks around the entire neck and the pressure that's inside shoots it off. And if you look at the cork and glass that you're holding in your hand, you'll see that basically the piece of glass stays on the cork.
And we talked about we're going to do a joint class on this, right?
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah, we'll do this. It's a 3-day class.
Yeah.
The first day is we sort of try to find the proper bottle of sparkling to buy. That's about 4 hours. The second day we go on eBay and we try to source out a possible sword or saber, if you will. Or we can get the Hanzo sword from Kill Bill if we can.
That one would probably be good for it. Yeah.
And the third day we go to Prospect Park, where the Great Googamooga will be, and then we see who shoots their thing the furthest.
Yeah, you know, I was really hoping that they would ask me as part of the extra Mooga. You know, they have the whole thing with the chefs doing demos. Nobody, you know, I thought they would ask me to do this as part of that. You know, I feel like that would add a lot to the Googamooga, but nobody asked me.
How much are tickets to the 3-day Saber?
The 3-day Saber, actually, it's a joint thing, so we brought the price down a little bit. It's only $250.
Oh, sweet. Oh, nice.
Yeah, and all the profits go towards the next Quentin Tarantino movie. Yeah, the Darjeeling Limited, I think. I forget the name of it. Yeah. Do we have Laura Wirtz? I know she just got married. Let's pull her up.
You want her in a minute?
Yeah, please. Yeah. No, Laura Wirtz, 86list.com. She just got married. 86list.com is a service for restaurant professionals to find employment throughout the tri-state area particularly, but nationwide. As restaurateurs grow, 86list.com grows. Harry, man, that was awesome.
Thank you. We haven't even tasted the Prosecco yet.
That was the thing that Jesse Kiefer, the producer, had mentioned with like glass shards. They go out. The carbonation pushes it all out.
You shouldn't worry.
And
we'll go over this in class. This is on the second day. Yeah.
The prevailing theory is yes, that the glass shards move away from the bottle when you do this. I've done this couple dozen times, and so far nobody's drank any glass that I'm aware of, so I feel comfortable doing it, but you know, no warranties.
Perfect. Let's pour. Laura Wirtz is probably still on her honeymoon, so we'll just move on from that. It's okay. We're gonna pour here. We got the bubbly. Look at that. Oh,
it's pretty.
Oh, she's on. Okay. Hold on. Laura.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Mazel tov to you.
Thank you very much.
Are you on your honeymoon still?
No. We're back.
You're back? We all poured a glass of champagne. Harry Rosenblum from Brooklyn Kitchen has just sabered a bottle of Prosecco with a butter knife from Roberta's.
Oh, and daddy.
He's literally pouring it as we speak, and we're going to toast to your wedding.
Oh, wonderful.
Right now. Are we all set here? All right.
So.
Laura Wirtz.
Laura.
Much mazel to you.
And cheers.
And Greg, 86list.com. Okay, Laura. Thank you. I had a great time at your wedding 2 weeks ago. I need to get in touch with you. I have to hand you your present. You know, I have a year to give you your present. I just want to remind you of that.
I know. I have people that won't give it to me for a year. They want to make sure we make it.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah.
Those are all your Yenta friends from Jersey, though. That was a joke. You're supposed to laugh at that. So, do we have a hot job of the week? Because I just wanted to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in a while.
I know. I do have a hot job of the week.
Go ahead.
And I think it's a great job. It comes from Ted and Honey, which is a farm-to-table cafe in Cottle Hill, Brooklyn.
So hot.
They're looking for a line cook for their busy cafe. So they have a cafe in Cottle Hill, and then they also just recently opened a second location at the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Okay.
So they make all their food to order, and they're looking for a line cook with some experience who's clean, organized, and efficient. And if they have a food handler certificate, that is a plus.
What else was I going to say? Were you overwhelmed at your wedding, or did you have a good time?
It is, like everyone says, it's a blur and it's overwhelming, but I just had so much fun. It was just so much fun.
We need to catch up. Thank you again. Congratulations on your wedding. We'll talk in a few days. Laura Wirtz, 86list.com with the hot job of the week. Let's take a break. We're going to come back with Allison Winninghill and Chef John Lamanto of Terroir Porch. From this we start to this year, bar. The new, where are we now? Hooray, the blues of everyone. We're back. Morning After, Terroir Porch, the High Line, the Garden in the Sky, or the thing you drive under if you're on the west side, south of 28th Street, I believe. Talk to me about this, Allison Winninghill and Chef John Lamanto. Johnny, as we may call you. Can I call you John?
You can call me Johnny.
Yeah. Cool. I see you usually in the Tribeca location.
I'm at all the locations, but...
I mean, that's the one I go to.
I try to work at a Tribeca as much as possible.
Okay, talk to me about the project. Summer's coming, the High Line, there's some space there. You guys are doing some work. What's going on?
Yeah, we're
going
to be above 15th Street around, and we're hoping to open the 22nd of May.
Is it an official open date for the whole location, or does everybody have their own openings? Because there's other places
I think there's already vendors happening. But
yeah, there's vendors there open already. Yeah.
And I can have some of those great is it meatball sliders I've had before?
Yeah.
So I can get some of that.
They'll be there.
Or is it the summer of Riesling, or is it the fall of Falanghina? What's going on now? I can't keep up with you guys these days.
We're going to have the summer of Riesling.
Summer of Riesling? Remix?
Effect. Yeah. Remix edition.
Okay. So that's good for you guys, because you can use your old t-shirts from last year.
We plan to.
Awesome. And we're in a storage unit space here.
A
shipping unit. If you're driving
visual.
Through Newark, says Maersk on the side of it.
It'll be this exact size.
Okay. And you said something about like there's a...
We're going to have a little takeout window behind you.
Takeout window.
For the radio people to listen to. There's a takeout window behind you.
So
we're going to have a bar. There's going to be a full kitchen.
So takeout one side, bar in the front. And then are you able to walk around the Garden in the Sky, or you have to stay in a specific spot?
Well, there's going to be a railing that's overlooking that avenue and river there, and people can stand there and enjoy a glass of wine, but we'll also have table service.
Is it complicated to the logistics of it with everything? Is that what you guys are dealing with? Because you say glass, you have to get those resin glasses. Are they going to have the T on them? Are you going to do plastic?
We will have the T.
It'll be glass.
Well, something with the Highline is that they want everything to be biodegradable, compostable, recyclable. They're very concerned, as we all are.
Yes.
Sustainability.
Yes.
So we will have plastic glasses. They will have the T, but they'll be recyclable.
The greenware.
The greenware. Yeah. No, they're not the green. It's called Govino.
Oh, I won't use it. I won't use it. Get away from me. I can't even look at it.
But it's a vessel for drinking from. But it works perfect.
Don't put it in the dishwasher.
Don't put it in the dishwasher. Yeah. No dishwasher.
Or sell it fast enough, or it'll kind of lose itself in the warehouse before it gets stolen. is this in a menu, as a chef, doing this kind of a project, is it something that you feel inspired by, or is it something that you kind of have to do for the brand, or is it both? No, I say that because there's a lot of off, but it gives you a lot of exposure too.
Every project you're on has its challenges.
Yeah.
So this is a logistical nightmare. And
How do you get it up there? Do you carry up the stairs like this? Who does that?
Yeah, we purchased a Ford Explorer. Oh. We'll be bringing all the food to premise. There will be some things done there. There'll be things done offsite. It's like a giant catering gig for 6 months,
and it's every day.
And
are you doing all the production out of Tribeca?
We're actually going to do the production out of Hearth.
At a Hearth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How is Chef Marco Canora doing these days?
He's doing good.
Yeah.
He's got a lot on his plate, as we all do, but Chef's doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he popping in and out of the Tribeca locations? I mean, the other terroir locations?
I mean, yes and no. That's what I do.
Yeah. So you're kind of in charge of that?
That's
CDC, if you will, or...
Correct.
Okay.
That's what I do.
Chef de cuisine for all of our people listening.
I think actually I'm executive.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah, I'm fancy.
Fair enough. Executive chef.
Yeah.
Allison, you have a project coming up, too. I don't know if you're allowed to talk about it at all, but there's a project that I've read in the newspapers recently.
Oh, yeah.
What is that project?
Oh, I think, are you talking about Brooklyn? A terroir in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Is that
No Sleep
that?
Till.
No Sleep.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That was the thing I read about. Park Slope, if you will, right across the street from TD Bank.
Yes. We're taking over the old Great Lakes spot, which used to be a favorite haunt of mine.
Yeah, mine as well.
we're hoping to have a jukebox. I'm looking into it. We'll see what happens.
Why'd you have to say across from TD Bank? You could have said next to Blue Ribbon.
Because I don't want to give the Bromberg brothers any more exposure.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
But honestly, it seems...
And I wanted to everyone who needed a free pen to know where the hell to go.
And coin counting.
Free coin counting.
Seven cents on the dollar.
It seems very far away, the Park Slope. We're dealing with the Highline right now. Once the Highline gets on its feet, then you can ask me about Park Slope, because...
it's like that project that's looming in the background.
And I'll be there soon enough.
Speaking of dive bars and stuff, Great Lakes, when did you guys hang... Did both of you guys used to hang out there?
I used to live in Prospect Heights. So.
And you said Great Lakes was a great place. A bartender, a friend of mine, Ridgely, used to work there. I don't know if you know that guy, but to get really New York-y on you. what else is going on in the empire that is? You have the Summer of Riesling of Terroir.
Guga Muga.
You guys
Summer
are doing
of Riesling,
that?
Yeah.
We're all consumed by this thing. I feel like every restaurant should close and just go to Prospect Park. I really hope for the great Guga Muga people and myself, it does not rain on May 13th. What is it?
19th and
20th. 19th and 20th, yeah. On May 19th and 20th, we will be set up for that. The morning after, the Heritage Radio Network tent will be set up for rain. Rain or shine, we will be there. Jesse Kiefer, we wanted to talk about a little stuff. Can you come into the studio if you have a chance?
I see her.
Here we have Jesse Kiefer, producer here of The Morning After. Jesse, we're talking about a couple of things before we have coming up on the show. Anything, Guga Muga, we're gonna hit.
I mean, I think it's all Guga Muga next week, and then, once we hit the red carpets and the after parties at James Beard, we're going to have tons of people to talk to. We don't know who's going to win yet. We don't know who we want to approach yet.
Well, I spoke to Mitchell, and I kind of know a couple people that are going to win. I don't want to say it on air.
So you can play some bets? Can we play some bets?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. There's like a, it's. He's right. There's like 3 days worth of stuff. Like who wrote the book? The best book about carrots and like this. You know, there's like 20 like their subcategories and stuff. So he, you know, there's a lot of other stuff. But I think, you know, I go for the big awards. And he's right. The new restaurant is usually the most exciting, or best new chef is usually the most exciting. Those guys usually go on and change the culinary landscape in the U.S.
Well, best new restaurant. We got it in there. Tertullia is going to be best new restaurant.
Yeah, I hope so for Seamus, because he's really. I mean, he's pushed Spanish food forward as an American chef. On that end, Harry, your thoughts?
Well, I used to light the James Beard Awards in my previous career, so I actually used to spend like 48 hours in Lincoln Center, like watching over all of the crews, like setting up all the lights for the big awards. So I never paid a lot of attention back then as to who was going to win.
Because you used to work.
I used to do staging. I used to do lighting. I used to do lighting for television and events. So I used to spend a lot of time at Lincoln Center around the James Beard Awards for that. And then my world at the time was consumed with which chefs needed electricity for their deep fryers and all the stuff that they, you know, all that garbage.
Gaffer.
Yeah.
Is there a secret door we could sneak in over there?
At Avery Fisher? Yeah, if you get there like 24 hours before, you could go in on the loading dock and be like, "Hey, I'm here to help."
I'm a teamster.
You could just push like a case of lighting gear,
just
like
put, yeah,
into
push the Staten Island accent. And we'll be
I'm going into a meal penalty right now. Come on, gotta get in there.
Yeah, and then you just like carry one extension cord and like find your way to the top of Avery Fisher and go to sleep, and then you could wake up and you could be at the awards.
Or a stinger, as we call it in the industry, right? A stinger? Yeah. Is that what a gaffer would call it? Right,
but I figure if people are just, you know, if this is their first time, you know, tell them to look. If you say look for a stinger, they might, you know, look confused, and then you get caught. So you want to, you know, grab an extension cord.
And Jason, you know, like next year on the Friday before James Beard, you know, we're going to be up for food journalism, right?
We are pushing the
it's
limits.
It's going to happen.
We are after
at
we
least
do,
heritage after, for sure.
Yeah, I want like five of our shows up against each other.
Yeah, it's
that's what I want to see.
Yeah, it should. Exactly.
Who won for
bullshit. I want to be the Michelle Williams. I want to be the Michelle Williams of or the who's the Iron Lady? Meryl Streep. I want to be the Michelle Williams or the Iron Lady Meryl Streep.
So you want to be the pretty Iron Lady?
No. We want to be, you know, nominated for in the same category for two different shows. It has to happen.
See, it's always just been NPR against NPR against NPR.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who cares?
It's done. I kind of have a Michelle Williams haircut, so we're ready.
Okay, good. And I live in Brooklyn. On that note, this show takes place in Brooklyn. We are Roberta's. This is The Morning After, live Heritage Radio. Jack Inslee, executive producer of the network. Patrick Martin's founder, Heritage Radio. You can follow me on Twitter at the Jason Colucci, Colucci, for all of our people in Iowa that don't know how to spell Italian last names. We'll see you at the James Beard tomorrow night.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.